south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now, in keeping with the theme of our last show on Venezuela mostly, since I'm recording this show from Caracas right now, if you recall, on the last show, I mentioned that there are so few gringos in Venezuela, and Caracas being the largest city, you should see some, right? Well, I saw none. Anyway, if you ever find yourself down here, which I don't recommend, you are really kind of an odd sensation, especially if you dress and act like a gringo tourist, which I try not to under any conditions. But however, because this is Latin America, that generally means you're going to be taller, lighter skinned, and, well, just have that first world kind of look and attitude about you. In other words, no matter how you try to blend in, you really just can't. So be prepared, because you will know what it's like to be a B-grade rock star. In fact, people walk right up to you, smile, and say, "Gringo, huh?" The fact of the matter is, more than one young adolescent kid came up to me in Caracas, on the street, and said, "Gringo, huh?" and pointed proudly to the English lettering on their scruffy t-shirts. One was a bar team baseball shirt, and another advertising a roofing company in Queens. By the way, both t-shirts were way past their prime, and I'm sure it would never make it through the sorting process at Goodwill or Salvation Army. But you know the drill down here. Anything gringo is rare and cool. They figured they could bond with me because they had a t-shirt in English. Now, of course, that sort of thing's going to happen to you all over South America as well as in Central America, except there's a big difference. In Central America, when locals try to make small talk with you, that is, if you know enough Spanish or they know enough English, which is rarely the case unless you're on the tourist trail. Like I may have mentioned before, in South America anyway, you're not going to get anyone saying to you, "So you're a gringo, huh? Well, I have an Uncle Julio in Chicago." You're just not going to get that, because South Americans have very few relatives and friends up in the States to brag about, which is, of course, totally the opposite for Mexicans and Central Americans. Remember, South Americans would love to get to the States, but they have, because of very difficult logistics, no easy way of slipping through Mexico and getting across the border to the States. For them, it's almost impossible unless they try to get there legally. That is, they need a much better than average paying job, not to mention credit, references, and money. Meaning they can not only swing the visa, but the airfare too. And that's why there are so many illegal South Americans in Europe. Not that they start out illegal, they never do. But once there, they overstay their visa and become illegal. But to get to Europe from South America, the ticket could run almost $2,000. Though the advantage for them is, South Americans need no visa to go to the mother country, Spain. Except for Colombians, because of that Colombian drug connection thing and such, which is a special case. Then, once you're there, you get a 90-day tourist visa and free entrance to any other Eurozone country. So, South Americans always end up in Europe legally on a tourist visa. Then they just seem to disappear. Well, a good majority of them anyway. Some say over 80%. The fact is, there are millions of illegal South Americans in Europe right now. Not tens of millions of illegals like they've got in the States, but millions nevertheless, so Europe does have its problems. So anyway, as it turns out, if a South American can afford that nearly $2,000 to pull off that trip, that will really leave out the very lowest classes and dirt poor who've got nothing to lose and who'd like to escape to a first world country. So in effect, the millions of illegal South Americans living in Europe are better educated and more cultured than the dirt poor illegals that end up in the States. Illegals in the States are almost always the poorest of the poor and the most undereducated. And another big reason why 99% of South Americans who want to get the hell out prefer saving up their dough for an air flight to Madrid is because, unlike in the U.S., there is no language barrier at all. They can instantly communicate. On second thought, maybe I should take that back. I've been hearing now that the southern states that border Mexico have been so Latinized that not knowing a bit of English is no longer a barrier once you get in. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that's what I've been hearing. And I even heard that in some of those states, you never have to learn English at all. They teach public school in Spanish, and you could take your GED exam in Spanish, too. Not to mention your driver's license test in Spanish. Oh, man. Think I'll clam up about that now before I step into some deep doo-doo. Suffice it to say that me and all my long-term expat friends agree there really is no hope for the U.S. as we once knew it. Not anymore. Which makes that, let's see now, reason number 526 why we're down here and you're not. Not yet, anyway, right? And here's something really interesting. I wonder how many of you listening to this have ever flown on a Latin airline, like Copa or TACA or Avianca, along with a dozen others. Now, all the big major Latin airlines do end up touching down in the States in Chicago, Miami, New York, and L.A. So what makes these Latin airlines different than the ones you're accustomed to up there in the States? Well, for one thing, the captain and the crew and all the auxiliary personnel speak Spanish as their primary language. Yep, and that means they speak Spanish when they're having conversations with each other, too. Meaning, if you don't know your Spanish, you'll never be able to eavesdrop on someone if you think they're talking about you. And yes, I know, even with all the usual North American airlines, they have Spanish translations of all their cabin messages. On these Latin airlines, like Copa and TACA, you'll hear the English messages with a heavy Spanish accent. And if you're paying attention, you'll notice that the stewardesses are still hired somewhat the usual macho Latin way. In other words, they're almost always thin and good-looking. Like stewardesses in the States used to be in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Which, I know, totally violates the equal opportunity laws you're used to up in the States, but in Latin America, things are quite different. Also, do realize that no one's complaining. Except maybe the plainer ladies that never got hired, but we'll never know that. Now note, as from my experience, the meals aren't nearly as tasteless or cardboard textured as the ones you get on American airlines. It won't be the same old, same old. They'll throw in an empanada and a tortilla here and there, as well as refried beans occasionally, even fresh tropical fruits and real 100% natural fruit juices. Stuff, you know, that you'll never get on the menu at Delta or American. And about that maintenance issue, which we talk about here all the time, or the lack of it in Latin America, since they're international airlines too, these Latin airlines that land in the States, Europe, Canada, etc., they have to strictly hold to international airline regulations, or they'll never get permission to set down in an international airport. So yes, if you take a Latin airline that touches down in the States, there will be maintenance and it will be up to first world standards. However, you are taking your chances if you fly an airline that's exclusively within one Latin country. I've been on a few nail biters myself where they're nothing more than chicken buses with wings. Just a little word of warning there. But note that when you're on a Latin-based airline, everybody's just 1,000% friendlier. I mean, you'll get no fake smiles from the stewardesses. They're real because they're happy to have that kind of job, for one thing. Down here, a stewardess job is like winning the lottery. And as for the pilots and the flight crew, I don't know how they are up in the States, but down here in Latin America, when you board the plane, they're right at the entrance to the door, shaking your hand and smiling at you. It seems like every time you get on a Latin plane, it's like a TV commercial or promo for how great the airline treats its people. But there's nothing fake about it. They actually seem to love their jobs. And it's really not a staged event either. They're just standing there greeting you and telling you to have a good flight and all that crap. And you'll also get that on the way out of the plane too. The flight crew will be standing at the door, not just rattling off that "have a nice trip, hope you make your connection" crap, again with actual genuine smiles. And this you're probably not going to believe, but in my very last trip on Copa down to South America, when the plane landed, the pilot got on the microphone and said in three languages, Spanish, Portuguese, and English, you know, the usual spiel, "We're glad you chose Copa as your airlines, and we hope you'll fly again with us sometime." Sure, they said that all right and in three languages. Every airline goes through that spiel. But get this. After that, the pilot said, "You know, we at Copa Airlines really love our jobs, and we love all of you, our passengers, too. And I'm not kidding when I say I really love you." And he stood there up at the front door for a second or two and looked out at everyone, And the whole Latin crowd listened and accepted it just as if it was a normal everyday thing. Now, I know if that kind of thing happened up in the States, I mean, let's say a pilot for United or Southwest Airlines did that, they'd probably ground him and give him a psychiatric evaluation, you know? Every American passenger on that plane hearing that would think and look to each other and say, is there something wrong with that guy? And by the way, if you think that was a one-time event, I've had similar things happen to me in at least a dozen Latin American flights. And not just Copa either. And you know, I really think some of these guys and gals would invite you home for dinner if they could. Not just because you're a gringo or a gringa either. Though, don't forget, you've got that gringo advantage, so it does help. Anyway, you might remember from the last show, I mentioned that in Caracas, Venezuela, I was in a six-person tram going up a mountain, and I noticed right away that one of the Venezuelan guys taking photos had a new iPad with a broken screen, but it still worked. Or seemed to, since he was taking photos and checking out the pictures. And if you remember, I said to the guy, had some bad luck, huh? What'd you do, drop it? Then the guy managed a half of a laugh and said, these days, when you buy an iPad, the best thing you could do is wrap the screen with a piece of metal and fracture it a bit. Then it won't get stolen. In other words, you crack the screen, not enough to break the thing, but just to make it unsellable. And I said, what? He said his iPad won't get ripped again because there's no market for iPads with broken screens. So why am I bringing this up again? Well, the other day I was talking about this very incident to a couple of gringo expats living in Central America. Talk about the gringo advantage. Both of those guys instantly thought of business ideas. And that's why I always say you got to come down here and see things with your own eyes. Then you're going to get those business ideas. They're going to flow like water. Now, this is what one guy said. Why doesn't someone, like a gringo of course, make some plastic decals that look like broken glass that you could sell to people with iPads at the dealer? They could just transfer it on the screen and walk out with a brand new iPad that looks like it's broken, but only when you want it to look like it's broken, like when you're out on the town. Or even better yet, why doesn't somebody develop an app that you could set up to make the screen look like it's broken, but it's really not, of course. Now, I'm telling you, it takes a first-world gringo to come up with things like that. Anyway, you get the picture. Why not make it look like it's damaged when it's really not? Oh, and since we're talking about that gringo advantage, specifically the gringo advantage when you're down here in a place like Venezuela, last time I was down here, when Chavez was still alive, back then, his repeated anti-gringo propaganda and slogans on TV and in the news every night kind of put the kibosh on the gringo advantage and gringos in general. I kind of felt that last time I was down here. I knew Venezuelans still loved gringos, but they just couldn't show it. They just had to toe the party line in front of others, if you know what I mean. But now, he's been dead a couple years, and I'll tell you already, I personally experienced the gringo advantage on steroids. For example, I went into a big mall the other day and stopped into a department store, and I saw there was a huge sale on pants. And since I had dollars on me and everything's priced in bolivars, I'd get at least four times as much if I paid in dollars than I would in bolivars. And although that's a huge part of the gringo advantage down here, that's not the gringo advantage I'm talking about. Now, while I was there, I saw a big sign on the door in the fitting rooms. It said, you are not allowed to try on underwear, lingerie, or white clothing of any kind in the fitting rooms, which was news to me. I never saw a sign like that before in my life. Of course, I understood about the underwear and lingerie thing, but the white clothes part I didn't get. And the lady explained to me that Caracas is always hot and humid, 88 or 90 degrees, and when people try on white clothes, they often smudge them up and get them dirty from sweat, etc. Therefore, it's not allowed. You have to take your chances and just buy it. You can't try it on. And of course, you can't return any items that you've bought either. That's a given in Venezuela. But in the very same breath, she said, you're a gringo, right? Don't worry, for you, you can try on anything you like. I looked at her and said, really? But you know, since I wasn't into buying anything white and certainly wasn't into trying on any lingerie, not this time anyway, I just said, no thanks, I'm just looking. So there you have it. The locals cannot try on white because, well, they might smudge and dinge him up a bit. But us ever so careful and sanitary gringos, at least in their mind, no problem. Now, you might call that reverse classism, but I just call it the gringo advantage. Now, like I mentioned on the last show or the one before, on this latest trip to South America, I flew in combination with a luxury cruise. And like I said, I'll be talking a lot more about that cruise, which I believe is the best cruise deal in the world right now. I'll get to that probably in a show or two, but I've got a few things to get settled about Panama, Colombia, and Venezuela first. Oh, and I almost forgot. If you want to sign up for my July 2014 Expat Wisdom Seminar, a very special intensive week in Central America off the Gringo Tourist Trail, just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin Seminar link near the top of the page, and check it out. Previous attendees have told me that it's the very best way to get a 2 to 5 year head start on being an expat in Latin America. And of course, I'll be talking about a lot of things I can never talk about on the radio show, so come on down and see for yourself. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin Seminar link, and check it out. All right, enough said about that. Now, you all know by now, I don't recommend Panama for expats. It's now blown way out of proportion and super expensive and in some ways actually higher priced than things are up in the States, except for a few glaring exceptions which we'll go into. If I mention the biggest problems in Latin America, the first one would be this huge real estate bubble that's about to pop. Number two, there is no Altiplano, so it's terrifically hot all the time. And then there's the negative social aspects. Panamanians are so used to gringos and the gringo dollars, they've become jaded by it and are no longer genuinely friendly or happy-go-lucky like they were 10, 15, or 20 years ago. Now, they're all stressed out about money, accumulating things, and making ends meet. Sound familiar? As you know, the economy is dollarized, and that's their unit of currency, so at least as a visitor, you won't be confused with exchange rates, and it's one of the few Latin countries that will accept bent, folded and mutilated money, U.S. money. But don't load up on change, that is nickels, dimes, quarters and that, because you'll find that your coin change is not always U.S. change. Panamanians stamp their own, so you'll have U.S. change and their change mixed in. So do look at your coins a day before you leave and make sure that you dump all the Panama ones. Because even though they're equal to U.S. nickels, dimes and quarters down here, they're not worth squat out of Panama. And you know, it's easy to accumulate $10, $20, or $30 in change, especially if you do a lot of clothes shopping or electronics shopping there. Now, if you're in Panama, you definitely have to do some shopping. It's highly recommended. But now you're thinking, wait a minute, Johnny just said Panama is first world expensive or more. So why shop for anything? Well, let me tell you, they have about a 1 square mile free trade zone in the city of Colón, Panama, that have some of the best deals anywhere in the world. Why? Because it's a free trade zone and you'll pay no taxes, and everything, I mean everything, comes through the Panama Canal, so you've got massive choices. I'm saying do your shopping in that Colón free trade zone called the Zona Franca. Everywhere else in Panama is expensive. Like in all the huge first world shopping centers, you'll be paying a lot more. Now, the city of Colón is on the Caribbean side of the Panama Canal, and it's an ugly, kind of dingy little city. It's not where tourists go to stay. They go to Panama City on the Pacific side of the canal. So, if you want to get to Colón to do some shopping, it's about a 30 to 45 minute ride. And that's why so many visitors miss it, because they stick around Panama City, the place with all those first world skyscrapers and hotels and restaurants. Anyway, just don't forget there's a free trade zone in Colón. And don't think that all of Colón is a free trade zone. It's just a small 1 square mile district in the city of Colón. Just ask anyone, they'll lead you to it. And by the way, once you get in that zone, it's completely safe to walk around. But as for the rest of Colón, I wouldn't walk it alone. Now, very recently, I stayed again, I've done this 3 times now, in one of the very best hotels in Panama City. The Hard Rock Hotel. Now, don't laugh. It's not that I buy into that Hard Rock theme or any of the media hype around that. It's that there's something quite special about that Hard Rock Hotel. And again, I don't make a cent for saying this. I'm just telling you like it is. Now, if you just purely book that hotel, it's maybe $120 a night for a double, and it's a very, very deluxe hotel. So that really is a nice price. You'd probably pay 2 or 3 times that up in the States. And the Trump Tower in Panama City, yes, they have a Trump Tower, is about 150 to 200 a night. And it's not really noticeably better than the Hard Rock. Now, don't get me wrong, I hate spending more than 100 bucks on a hotel room. But when you're in Panama and you get a deal like this, you just have to splurge. Normally, I pay anywhere from $30 to maybe $60 a night for a really great hotel. Because, of course, I'm nearly always off the gringo tourist trail, and I know which places are very cool and inexpensive. But you're not going to get those prices in Panama. So, when in Panama, why do I select the Hard Rock? Well, here's the thing that makes it different and special. It's one of the few luxury class hotels in the world where you can buy an all-inclusive plan for one day, a month, a week, or however long you stay there. That means breakfast, lunch, and dinner like a cruise ship, including drinks, etc. Just like any of the all-inclusive resorts you may have been to. Only better. Much better. Since it is truly a 4-star hotel, and some people say it's a 5, that means they have a lot of exotic stuff and everything is gourmet. The dinners, the lunches, breakfast, I'm not going to go into it here, but just believe me, I've been around and there isn't a deal like it that I've ever seen. Not for the price, or even twice the price. And that all-inclusive plan will set you back 50 bucks more, so it's like $170 or $75 a day for a double, that's for 2 people. Like I said, Panama's expensive, and if you go out to dinner just once, for 2 it's going to cost you way over 50 bucks if you go to any decent restaurant. And here, we're talking 3 meals and more, much more, for only 50 bucks extra per room per couple. Now, like I said, I don't like Panama, but sometimes you're stuck going there because it's an international travel hub. For example, that's where a lot of cruise lines take off from. So if you want to take a cruise through the canal or down the tip to South America, you're going to somehow have to find your way to Panama. So if you do, be sure to book that Hard Rock Hotel. But don't do it without getting the all-inclusive package. I believe if you're there for a couple of days, it's the best high-end deal there is. You might be wondering, why would the Hard Rock Hotel chain offer such a tremendous deal? Well, that's easy. It's a 66-story hotel and at least 20 of the floors are not even occupied. Though it could be 40. You can't really tell. Like I said in the past show, they ran out of money. And since there's such a huge real estate boom, and office and hotel bubble too, you know what that means? Hotel room and convention space competition is getting fierce. In fact, with the last room I had on the 40th floor, just looking outside the window, I counted 11 giant building cranes putting up skyscrapers. And that was just a view through a limited window shot to the ocean. Which reminds me of a recent hotel stay where there was an incident. Anyway, since I assume all you folks listening to these shows are pretty well traveled, you know that these days almost all hotels have a lockbox, usually attached to the wall by the bed or in a closet cabinet. And these days, most of them look pretty much the same. And most of them are digital jobs with a keypad. You know the type. Now, I know a lot of cheaper hotels don't have the digital kind, or maybe they don't even have a lockbox at all. But in the last 5 or so years, even down here in Latin America, many hotels have upgraded to these things. And by the way, if you've got one in the room, I always suggest you use it. But never, never use one of the common, easy-to-break passwords like 1234 or all even numbers or odd numbers. And never your birth date. Now, you know you can go to the internet and find the most commonly used passwords for lockboxes. In fact, there's a number of sites that'll list that stuff. So don't think that people that work at those hotels don't know about that. Anyway, just be smart. Now, if you notice, the inside of these lockboxes are always covered with a kind of a dark felt. Well, here's a tip. I always suggest when you first open your lockbox, you stick your hand in there and try to work your finger under that bottom piece of felt. If you notice, many times you'll be able to pull that felt piece right up. In other words, it's not attached or glued down to the metal surface on the bottom. It just kind of lays there covering the whole bottom, but it's not actually attached. Ever since I've run into these lockboxes, which I think the first time was about 20 years ago, back then they looked exactly the same except for the fact that you had an actual funky-looking key. Remember that? Anyway, ever since the first time I ran into those lockboxes, I've been running my hand along the bottom and pulling up that felt piece. And so far, 3 times I've come up a winner. What do I mean by that? Cash money, of course. And this last time in Panama, a small jackpot. $400 stuck under there. Because if you think about it, it's a good place to hide a few flat bills. Not that you're doing anything more secure by putting bills under that flat felt piece, but obviously some people do. And that's the 3rd time I was able to collect. So do have a look, because it's really finders keepers in that sense, because if you find something, who knows how long it's been sitting in there. Though I have to admit, when I found that $400, I was somehow expecting a knock on the door or the desk to ring up. But it never happened. Nor did it happen the other 2 times I found money. By the way, once in Costa Rica and once in Cartagena, Colombia. Now, if you're the kind of person who finds something like that and you don't feel right about taking it, just give it to your favorite charity or some poor unfortunate on the street. Or don't touch it. Just leave it there in the lockbox. Then do send me an email and tell me which room you stayed in. Okay, enough said about that. Now, like I said, I'm on a cruise line stopping off at various countries in South America. And I've been giving you first-hand reports on what's really happening down here in Venezuela. Reporting how the 3rd largest oil producer in the world is rapidly deteriorating and everyone's unhappy, even beyond unhappy, and just to survive, everyone's in on some kind of scam. Now, I gotta tell you, when I first got on this cruise ship and they told me there were 3,000 plus people on it and that 500 or 600 of them were Venezuelans, I wondered, how in the hell could that be? How could they afford a cruise, even though it's a very reasonable deal? We're talking about a country where there are huge shortages and everyone's scrambling to get by. Look, over 90% of the population makes minimum wage, which is only about $50 to $80 a month. That's a month, not per week. How come 500 or 600 very happy Venezuelans are hanging out on the cruise ship? Oh, and just for your information, this cruise is nothing like one of those carnival cruises to the Bahamas. All the people on this ship seem to be in families or coupled up, with what seems to be very few single guys, but a lot of groups of single young ladies in their late 20s and early 30s. What looks like junior executive type young women on a vacation of a lifetime. But what about those Venezuelans on board? Well, here's what I found out. They're not local corrupt politicians who are using their spoils to go on vacation. The truth will surprise you, and I'll get to that next week, so do stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.